It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid America. Seth Campbell joined alongside the dashingly stunning Scotty Bordelon today.
Every week you try to flatter me.
I try to butter you up a little bit before we get into the nitty gritty of things. And like I said, I like to, you know, give you the compliments that the viewers don't know whether or not I'm lying.
My dad told me I had a face for radio.
So. Well, you're realizing that dream right now, exactly. Mr. Bordelon. All right. Well, the Razorbacks, they didn't realize a dream when they went to Western Kentucky. They came out with a loss, a 79-86 loss to Western Kentucky. So I pose the question to you, Scotty. What was the biggest difference in this game over the previous eight?
Gosh, I don't know. We talked about it a little bit last week that Musselman was searching for a little bit more consistency just on both ends. But I think he was more concerned about the defensive end because Saturday was the fourth consecutive game Arkansas has allowed an opposing player to score 20-plus. Going back to when James Banks, I think, finished with a double-double. He scored 20 for Georgia Tech. No, Arkansas won on the road. That just kind of started a string of opposing players. It may not be necessarily a team's star player because I don't think Tavion Hollingsworth was Western Kentucky's star. Like, that was Charles Bassey. Arkansas did a decent job on him.
Right.
It's just I don't know what it is. It's almost – like turnovers just continued to be a factor. Arkansas, I think, had 8 turnovers in the first half at Western Kentucky, and then they had 4 in the 5-minute overtime period, which is not great. And those turnovers, one of them was Jalen Harris and Mason Jones not being on the same page, which was head scratching. It came like a few seconds after Mason was putting his shoe back on in the backcourt.
Yes.
And so the commentators were like, well, we don't really know if his head was in the play because he's dealing with his shoe. Like, I just don't know. It looked like some miscommunication there. There was an errant pass from Isaiah Joe to Desi Sills. Maybe Desi should have caught the pass, but it turned into points on the other end too. Just you can't go on the road and turn the ball over that many times, especially in key situations, and expect to come out and win. And I thought Arkansas did a really good job on Charles Bassey. The only points he essentially got were, I think he had 2 dunks in transition. One of them was a putback, and one of his other two scores was from outside the paint. So did a pretty good job on him. They harassed him, blocked several of his shots, and kept him off the glass, I thought, for the most part before he got hurt.
Yeah, if you would have told Musselman that Bassey's going to have 10 points on 4-6 shooting from the field, he would have taken that every single day of the week going into the game.
Yeah.
You talked about Mason Jones a little bit. Let's go ahead and get into there because I thought that the turning point of this game happened in overtime. You know, I wrote it down and I saw it was a Mason Jones play, and it didn't necessarily directly involve Mason Jones. This reminds me of what we've seen a little bit. We saw from this team a little bit against Georgia Tech as well, is, you know, your true self really comes out when you're on the road and you're playing in these close games. And Musselman is trying to teach these guys his way of playing basketball. It's a little bit different. We'll just say it like that. But he hasn't got them completely to buy in yet, which makes complete sense. We're 9 games into the season. So you wouldn't expect them to be the words that I'm searching for are completely understand the game plan to where when it's a panic situation, they revert to that instead of revert to what they were doing last year.
Right.
And as I said, we're 9 games in, so it makes sense that they wouldn't necessarily be able to revert back to that with Musselman's game plan. But so my turning point, I wrote this down. There's a minute 56 left, and it's 78-77 Western Kentucky. Arkansas has the ball. Sills turns it over, and Joe and Jones are getting back on defense. It's a fast break opportunity. It's a one-on-two, really. Tavian Hollingsworth goes up and under. And Joe played good defense, was on the backside, didn't want to foul Hollingsworth. So Hollingsworth goes up and under and makes the bucket. Turns it into a three-point game on a fast break. But Mason Jones just watched. Mason Jones was back there in the backcourt and was running back. And he had an opportunity to play defense, but instead he just kind of stayed on the other side of the lane, watched Hollingsworth go and go up and under. I feel like right there, if he's still playing that hard defense that Musselman wants him to play, then he contests that shot.
Just contest it. Yeah, that's it.
And make that, make it a more difficult shot. If Hollingsworth can go up and under with you on the backside of him trying to contest the shot, then you got to give him the points. And you're still in a three-point game. But I thought from that point on, Mason didn't play well in the overtime period, and I thought that really hurt Arkansas.
Yeah, and I didn't like the direction that he chose, like at the end of regulation, mm-hmm. with the ball in his hands, last second shot, he settled. He really settled, and he got away with it at Georgia Tech because he
banked it in,
miraculously banked in a three, but it was an awful shot. I mean, he's dribbling to his right. He has to swing his hips all the way around, and still it's like a 26, 28-foot shot. Yeah. He was pretty fortunate for it to go in. With the clock running down at Western Kentucky, it looked to me like he made his mind up that he was going to let another three go.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd not shot the ball well. The only jump shot that he'd made in that game was a really tough turnaround mid-range jumper from the free throw line. Other than that, he didn't make anything. And he didn't have his touch on his jumper. But watching him with the time running down, everybody knew what he was going to do. He was going to work himself into a three. And I wrote on our board, someone said that they didn't particularly like having the ball in Mason's hands late. I didn't have a problem with it, to be honest, because I've written in the past that he's close to a 50% shooter in the last 5 minutes of regulation and in overtime in his Arkansas career, which has spanned 40 plus games, which is
That's pretty crazy.
A good sample size. And he shoots 41% from three in that span too. Also pretty good. And he was around 85% at the free throw line. So I like having the ball in his hands there. What I didn't like was settling, because I've tracked like the scores his shots made and attempted off the bounce inside the arc all season. He scored 16 times off the bounce going either left or right. He favors the left. I think he's like 9 out of 15 and he's 7 of 9 moving right. So why not force the guy who's defending you to make a play and maybe put the game in the official's hands? And if you drive the lane, maybe you can get a whistle. If you do get a whistle, you're money at the line. You're almost 95% on the season at the line. So just he bailed out his defender too, and shot didn't go. And Jimmy Witt's putback fell just short too. Yeah, and
the Witt putback I thought was a really good shot. If he can get that shot off of the rebound, but I agree with you. You got to get something going towards the basket. You have to have that. You can, as a offense, you make it, there's so many more options. If Mason drives and everybody kind of knows what is going to happen at the end of the game with Mason having the ball, when he drives, that opens up, you know, if you want to shoot a three, you can have Joe in the outside of the arc. You can have somebody else take an open shot, which I would rather have somebody else take an open shot than Mason Jones taking a contested shot. Like I said, you got away with it against Georgia Tech, but that's getting away with it. That's not the shot that you want at the end of regulation.
Right. And I think if defenders see him put the ball on the floor, your instincts late in games, like you as a defender, you know that if this guy gets the shot off and it goes in, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
So your instinct is going to be to crash to him, because you don't want just one teammate contesting the shot. You want as many hands in his face and contesting the shot as possible. So that attracts at least one more defender. You've got Isaiah Joe, I think, was in the left corner, which I didn't.
We're going to talk about that here in a second.
Yeah, I don't know about stationing him there. Maybe if Mason drives, maybe if he puts the ball on the floor and goes left, he attracts Isaiah's defender for an open shot. But I didn't like that sequence at all.
I mean, case in point, we saw was Arkansas against Northern Kentucky, where they almost lost that game. Adrian Bailey came off of his man. It was Northern Kentucky, right? Where AJ Bailey came off of his man at the end of the game, and there was an open three opportunity that Northern Kentucky just didn't hit.
Yeah, and Musselman said, like, late game situations like that, your instincts are to overhelp. I think because a guy put the ball on the floor and looked like he was attacking the basket, and he made the heady play to find an open shooter.
So drive.
For an efficient three-point shot.
That's what I haven't liked about Arkansas in their two road games. In their end of game situation is they haven't driven to the basket. Now, you also mentioned this a little bit earlier, Scotty. Tavian Hollingsworth went for 23 points. You said it's the fourth person to go for over 20 points in a game. Why is Arkansas all of a sudden, after playing just fantastic defense for the first five games of the season, why are they letting these players bust out like this?
That's a good question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's... You know, I think he scored 16 of his 23 in like the last 12 minutes. Like if you combine like 7 minutes of regulation and 5 minutes of overtime. And I mean, it could be guards' legs wearing down a little bit. And granted, like he got some of his points off transition scores. Like Mason turned the ball over toward the end of overtime and Hollingsworth went down and dunked it. Like that was a meaningless score, but it goes towards his point total. I don't know what it is, to be honest. And I mean, he's a talented guard. I think he scored 17 on Arkansas last year, had a really good game, rebounded the ball well, found teammates efficiently. And man, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe that's something we ought to ask Musselman the next time we see him. Cause think about it. Like the first played nine games, first five games of the year, Arkansas didn't allow any opponent to score more than 15. In the first three games, that number was 13. And now you've got a guy that's gone for, what did Banks go for, 20 plus?
I think so.
And then you give up 20 to Terry Taylor, 30 to Dontez Walton, and
23 to
Hollingsworth. Yeah, that's like if you limit those guys, then if you limit those guys to, as it seems like earlier in the year when Arkansas was preparing for Saeed Pridgett, their goal was to hold him to like 13, 15 points, somewhere in that range. You hold any of those guys to that mark, then I mean, it's a completely different ballgame. You're probably 9-0.
I think that a big key to this game as well is Arkansas was scoreless. They hit zero field goals, I should say, in the last 3 minutes and 12 seconds of the game in overtime. And then they had a combined 16 turnovers. And you said they had four turnovers in overtime. Arkansas can normally cover up. Like, Arkansas will go into scoring droughts. That's happened multiple times this season. But their defense has been able to kind of bail them out of that. And it didn't happen against Western Kentucky. Their defense wasn't able to bail them out. And defense is going to come first for this team. And I think that was a big key as well. You know, not putting any balls in the bucket and not being able to stop anybody in the overtime period. That hurt them. All right. Talk about a little bit of a bright spot here. Moving on. Coming out of the second half, the Razorbacks were down going into halftime, but they came out hot. An 11-2 run. You know, and I don't know if you saw this a little bit, Scotty, but Muss, in his press conference before the Western Kentucky game, talked about inverting their offense with Jimmy Witt, who's normally a point guard, was kind of playing in the down low spot. Mm-hmm. And they would invert it because Witt can hit that mid-range jumper so well that it kind of makes them spread the defense out a little bit more and makes them to where they can't pack it in. Well, I almost saw that happen on the defensive side where Witt was guarding Bassey on most and when they started out the second half. Is that a strategy you think that maybe Musk could use later on down the season, is having Witt guard some of these bigger guys?
It's definitely possible. I thought Arkansas did a great job defending Bassey. Just the only times that they really let him get loose was when he was in transition, and he's been great in transition. One of the I go to subscribe to hooplens.com, and they've got this advanced metric called PAM, which is points above median. And Bassey, I think, is about 10. I think his PAM in non-half court settings, like at the rim in transition, is like 10. And so you knew that you had to limit him in transition, and Arkansas didn't do that, but he didn't really beat him in the half court either. As Adriel Bailey and Reggie Chaney were pretty active, and the weak side help was pretty good. And I liked, to your point, I liked Jimmy Witt kind of fronting Bassey and being a little bit physical with him. He's got, his arms are so long.
Uh-huh.
Like he can almost like scratch his knee without bending over. Like they're that long. And I like that because it's almost like, okay, I see this 6'3 or 6'4 guard fronting my 6'11, 230-pound postman.
Mm-hmm.
It's, as a guard, it's probably pretty enticing to just be like, yeah, I can probably float it over this guy's head. But Jimmy's quick enough defensively, and he's got good enough reach to knock some of those balls away. And I like that idea. And I wonder if it was a bait more than anything, just to see if you could get some more of those interior, try to get some of those, some more interior touches for Bassey, and kind of bait Western Kentucky into tossing it into him.
That's a good
and,
point.
And have Witt kind of there doing his best to knock passes away, and then just kind of count on your backside help to give you a lift too.
No, that's a really good point, because Arkansas did have backside help. The few times that they were able to get it in there,
Chaney, and that's the only reason you feel comfortable probably putting Jimmy putting Jimmy on Bassett.
Yeah, Chaney or Bailey would come over in almost sandwich Bassey in a way, and it would make things difficult for him. All right, Isaiah Joe, we're going to move on now, talk about Isaiah Joe. He kind of broke out a little bit, 18 points. He was 6 of 15 from the field, 5 of 14 from three-point land, which is pretty good. I mean, that's shooting 36% if you round up from the field.
I didn't have a problem with him shooting 14 threes.
You don't. The problem I have, and it's something that you pointed out to me with your stat tracking and your shot charting, is I didn't realize this, but Joe is not a good corner three shooter.
Isn't that strange? It's so weird. Yeah. So like in November alone, Isaiah Joe was 2 of 7 from the left corner, 0 of 12 from the right corner. And
so he's 2 of 19 from the corners.
2 of 19 from the corners in November. Yeah. And I mean, he knocks down threes on the left and right wings at a pretty good clip. He was 10 of 22 from the left wing, 8 of 19 from the right last month. But he was 1 of 4 combined from the corners against Western Kentucky. And he's now 3 of 11 in the left corner, 0 of 14 in the right. And it's kind of head scratching to me a little bit. And I don't have his, that's 12% if we're trying to calculate it.
Trying to do that in my head.
Which is not great. I'm not sure what he shot from the corners last year. I don't have those numbers right in front of me, but I know it was a lot better than 12%. And I don't know what it is about that corner, but I mean, it's one of the more efficient shots in basketball. It's the shot that's closest to the rim that provides you another point if you hit it. And he's one of the best three-point shooters in the country, arguably the best in the SEC, and he's struggling mightily from there. And we saw earlier in the year, I think, some of Musselman's half-court sets involved Isaiah running off screens and into the corners. And I don't know if it's just a matter of him not having his feet properly set when he lets the shot go, if it's defenders getting a hand in the face. I've also noticed he's missed plenty of wide open threes, which
is shocking.
Pretty uncharacteristic for him, because last year it was like, I mean, it was cash when he was left open. So that's something that I picked up on, you know, just kind of doing the November in review in terms of the shot charts. That was pretty stunning. Like I noticed in games that, man, it seems pretty odd that he's not knocking down shots from the corner, but you see 0 of 12 for a month in one corner and 2 of 7 in another. it's pretty alarming. And now he's up to 0-14 and 3-25 in the corners total.
It seems like at times too, Arkansas will run plays for him to be in the corner. And like you said, that is a good shot because it's the closest three pointer that there is. You from the corners, you're a little bit closer than when you are on the wings. But at some point, you know Musselman is tracking this. You know that they have the numbers that you have right there.
Yeah, I think they know this. Yeah.
So do you stop running plays for Joe to go into the corner at some point?
I don't know. Maybe you run it for someone else. I don't know. I can go back and I don't think any – like nobody on this team is shooting the ball well from three. Like we need to say that.
Right.
Right now. Mason Jones – doesn't shoot threes hardly. He shot 18 threes from the left wing in November, and he took 5 from both corners combined. Desi Sills was 1 of 6. Gene Telsilla was 1 of 7. Jalen Harris was 1 of 3. So nobody's shooting the ball well from three.
Which Sills had a breakout game, I guess, from the 3-point land comparatively to what he has been doing. I mean, what did he make? He made 3 of 7 from 3-point land, which is...
Oh, Sills, yeah.
Yeah, Sills.
Yeah, Desi.
Him.
Yeah, Desi played really well the other day. Yeah, his two of his three threes came from that left corner where he was previously 1 of 5 from there. It was good to see him knock down some shots. And I thought he was Arkansas's best player by far at Western Kentucky. I think he was 4 of 4. Yeah, it was 4 of 4 in the paint, and he knocked down three threes. And he had a moment, I think it was maybe in the second half when Arkansas started making that push, maybe it was during that 11-2 run, where he just absolutely locked up one of Western Kentucky's guards on the perimeter, forced a turnover. He did, outside of some turnovers, he was fantastic. That was the best game I thought he'd played this season, and probably in his Arkansas career. He was great.
Desi Sills was great. The Razorbacks couldn't pull out the victory, though, 86-79. That is a very thorough recap from Scotty and I on the Razorbacks game at Western Kentucky. Before we move on, give you a little bit of Tulsa prep. It's time to be held accountable, Scotty. And really, really, this is for me. Let's review our play the percentages.
Yeah, I thought about this week. I didn't know if you're going to bring it up or not.
I'll be the good host, and I'll bring it up. Last week, we played the game, play the percentages. We gave a percentage chance that we thought all of these things would happen, and well, Seth did not do well. Scotty won last week. Okay, so starting out, we asked the question about who would play more minutes for the rest of the season starting against Western Kentucky. Would it be Reggie Chaney or Adrio Bailey? You said that it was a 35% chance that Chaney would play more than Bailey. I said it was a 45%. Well, if Western Kentucky game is any indication, then we were both right. We probably should have just gone even lower, though, because Bailey played 29 minutes while Chaney played just 12.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, this is where it gets interesting. The basketball team loses before football team hires a coach. Hey, I have insider information. I'm just kidding. I don't have any insider information. I was going to say that, they were heading there. They had already hired him before Saturday, but that's not that. I don't think they made it official until Sunday.
I think my prediction was right on the money.
Yeah.
So they'd lose at Western Kentucky, hire a coach Saturday, introduce him Monday. Sunday, or hire him on Sunday, introduce him on Monday.
You're right. Your 65% is right. I said it was 10% because I really believed they would beat Western Kentucky. Wrong. Okay, Jamario Bell gets in a game. Scotty said 75% chance. I said 80. That still hasn't happened, but that was one game, and it was a close game. We didn't really expect
Jamario Bell. Yeah, that's still a possibility.
I mean, Gene Telsilla barely played.
Man, wouldn't it be wild if he, like, almost got as much run as Gene Telsilla did in December?
That would be wild, actually. That's a topic for another podcast. And then... the last one that we did, Arkansas rolls into Indiana undefeated. Scotty said a 35% chance. I said a 70% chance. We really thought it depended on the Western Kentucky game. Scotty was right. So what have we learned from play the percentages? Listen to Scotty. Don't ever listen to Seth. All right, moving on. We're going to play another game. This one has nothing to do with percentages. That way I can't be wrong.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We're going to play one word. So give me one word to describe whatever question I ask you, and then we'll elaborate on it. But one word, the atmosphere that you want to, that Bud Walton will bring for the rest of this season.
I think it'll be energetic. I think there's only, if I read this right, I think there are only two, and I'm probably speaking more to weekend games, but I mean, Arkansas fans can make a midweek game fun. Like they can, students can turn out, they can come back from Christmas break and make games interesting and,
right,
and rowdy during the midweek. But I think there are only two Saturday games left at home for the rest of the season that aren't sellouts yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, what is that? Texas A&M and Tulsa this weekend.
I think Tulsa is one of them.
So, I mean, I'm expecting some pretty fun crowds. I think fans are excited about the start, even though Arkansas lost it at Western Kentucky. You were in the game. Just if you can clean up some silly mistakes and, you know, just shoot the ball a little better. I think people are excited, and I think they kind of want to be there when Arkansas, you know, kind of gets things clicking. Like they're working really well together and they're connected defensively. And then you have one of those patented games that seems like it happens maybe once or twice a year in Bud Walton on a Saturday where Arkansas just explodes offensively.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of want to be there for that, and they're kind of waiting on that. And when it does happen, it's going to be electric in there.
Yeah, electric is a good word. I'm going to use a static. I think that the energy that Musselman brings as well is just different, and people almost just want to go see it. You know, not even to go see the team, but just to see Musselman and how he's got this team playing. And then, you know, if they get up and they get loud and they make a run, Musselman is one of the most animated coaches.
Yeah, they want to see him run out to the SEC logo
and
after
start
a timeout again. Yeah,
start waving his hands up and down, tell him to get louder. So I think that Musselman's energy, the energy that he brought to the team, will translate into Bud Walton and make that place ecstatic and make it a place that sometimes it seems too big for the venue, because there'll be some midweek games in early November, which is normal, to where, you know, the upper deck may have just a few people in it.
Sure.
It's a midweek Tuesday and there's a football game on Saturday or whatever at the beginning of November, that the place can seem just too big. And you're like, well, should Arkansas have really gotten this big stadium? And then there's other times on those Saturday games, whenever you're playing, maybe in February, January, even December. I remember I went to the Arkansas versus Oklahoma game when Oklahoma had Blake Griffin. And this is when I was younger. I got tickets there. It was December 30th. And that place was rocking. Arkansas ended up beating, I think Oklahoma was number 5. But Arkansas ended up beating. And like those moments, whenever the Razorbacks have those moments, you know, yeah, this team definitely needs this many seats, because this place is one of a kind when it does fill up like that.
And those kind of moments are intoxicating too, make people want to come back just because, you know. it's probably going to happen again. Like I said, it happens. It seems like it happens once or twice a year. It really does.
Yeah. All right. Moving on from the atmosphere, one word, Arkansas playing 3 games in 21 days.
For me, it's kind of tough, but for those guys, it's probably welcomed. Like they played 7 games in November, 7 games over the course of 25 days. And I think they just got 5 in December. I say welcomed, but at the same time, Musselman's got them back in like training camp type practices.
They're probably going
out. So they're probably like, man, I wish we could play like 5 games a week. But I think it'll be good for them. They will go hard. Like we said last week, they'll go hard Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then kind of start to pull back on Thursday and Friday leading up to those games. But I think it's really good for them, just and for the staff to just kind of reinforce what they want. Like they can implement game plans and be like, here's our goals for the game on offense and defense. But just kind of getting back to, and I kind of hate saying this, but get back to fundamentals, just work just to be crisper on offense and just work on shooting the ball. Like all you can do is get reps up, and Arkansas needs to get some reps up because they're 317th in the country according to KenPom in 3-point shooting.
That's
really not good. If they could even be average, they could be average from three to complement being top 40 in the country and knocking down 2-point looks. I mean, that this team offensively could make an improvement. But yeah, that was a long-winded way to say that there's probably a mixed bag. Like, they probably wish that they were playing more games, but at the same time, it's probably good for their legs. I'm sure some of these guys are kind of worn out already.
I'll say, I don't know per se, but I'll say welcomed because of the rest they need on their legs. And yeah, Musselman did say that they're going to go back to a training camp. So I don't know how much, just R&R these guys will get, but Joe played 42 minutes. You have Sills playing 36 minutes. Jones is playing 36 minutes. Witt played 43 minutes. And Musselman said that, these guys are not playing like an NBA schedule where they have to play 72 games. And so he doesn't believe in having a deep bench. And he's going to play these guys these kind of minutes because they're going to play at most 2 games a week, especially when conference season hits. That being said, these guys are 9 games in and have played a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
So when you only have to play 1 game a week, I feel like that will help their legs when they get into the the last 5 minutes of the second half for these games.
Right. I'm looking at KenPom right now. He's got a metric that's percentage of minutes played.
Okay.
Isaiah Joe's at 92.4. It's a lot of minutes for a shooter who needs his legs.
And that could be a reason why maybe he's not shooting as well.
And Jimmy Witt's at 87, which, I get Jimmy Witt being his number being that high. He's the floor general. He kind of gets everything going. But I also like that he's using Jalen Harris and Jimmy Witt at the same time, where he can take a little bit of the burden. And, Jimmy doesn't have to initiate the offense as often.
Yeah, when
with Jalen out there, but
when Harris is in the game, Witt almost turns into a post player.
Yeah,
it's funny because he'll go, like we were talking about earlier, they'll invert the offense. Jimmy will start at the low block and work that way, and I like that offense.
Run some post ups for him, kind of like Jason Kidd did when he was around.
All right, last one here. One final word. Arkansas's game against Tulsa. What do you expect?
Win, like just a bounce back. Tulsa lost to Arkansas State at home on Saturday. And before that, they beat Arkansas Pine Bluff. Congratulations.
They're trying to play all of the Arkansas
They
schools.
Have, though. They have beaten Vanderbilt. And so I'd have to look at Vanderbilt right now, 6-2. Their 2 losses are to Richmond in overtime and the Tulsa. Vanderbilt has beaten Austin Peay, so you've got a common opponent there. I expect Arkansas to bounce back. I think their legs will be a little bit refreshed, and I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas maybe has one of its best scoring games potentially. I think the layoff is going to be pretty good for Arkansas offensively, and I think defensively they'll kind of get back to a little bit of the way that they look maybe toward the beginning of the season, because I know Musselman is just he's not pleased with the way they defended the last 4 games, even though they've won 3 of those.
I'll say rejuvenated, and I think it'll be a rejuvenation of them getting back to the defense that they played. I think Musselman, with having a week, he'll come up with a good scouting report for these guys. They'll be able to shut down. I wouldn't expect anybody to go for over 20 points on Tulsa's team. And I like what you said about you would expect them to be able to shoot a little bit better because maybe they have their legs underneath them. So I'm going to go with a rejuvenated team, an electric atmosphere, and you tie all that together, and it should equal what you said, a win for the Razorbacks in Bud Walton Arena.
One guy to keep an eye on, I think, for Tulsa is a guy named Brandon Rochelle. I don't know if he's their best player, but 6'6", 220. What did we talk about with like Dontez Walton and Terry Taylor? It's like that build of player that kind of gives Arkansas fits.
Right.
He's shooting 64% inside the arc, so he'll be a handful.
be a good test for Arkansas. Well, we want to thank you for joining us here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. I almost called us something else. The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, presented by Whole Hog Sports. You can check out all of Scotty's great content on wholehogsports.com. This basketball team kind of got overshadowed. There was some big announcement that happened this week.
Yeah, they hired a football coach, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what's up with that. But the basketball team's lost to Western Kentucky, got overshadowed a little bit. Scotty and I wanted to come on here and give you 30 solid minutes of basketball talk, which we do every single week. So if you would like to, hit that subscribe button, share us with your friends. Be a great resource. We'll be bringing you Arkansas basketball talks all season long. As we did mention, we are going to have another podcast out about the football team. So make sure to subscribe to Hog Radio, or pardon me, Whole Hog Radio, and you can get all of our podcasts that we're going to be doing. Well, for Scotty Borderline, I'm Seth Campbell saying so long, and thank you for joining us.